Okay, I'd like to call this meeting of the Los Osos Community Service District Board of Directors to order. Laura, can we have a roll call, please?
Of course. Director Gatchel.
Here.
Director Ohilski.
Present.
Director Womack.
Present.
Vice President Desenia.
I'm here.
President Forcroy.
I'm here. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for being here tonight. It looks like we have everybody that we need for the meeting and some public participation, too. That's great. I'm going to move us to our general action item 2A, which is the mid-year budget adjustments. Ron, you have a presentation.
I certainly do. Thank you very much. This year, we don't have a whole lot to move around in terms of budget adjustments. So I'm going to go through each fund, highlight what the changes are, show you the summary table at the end of each fund, and answer any questions you have along the way. So with that, let's get started. Go ahead, next slide. Fund 100, administration, there's really no activity here. We just moved a couple of things around to balance the way they should be in the budget. So everything was budget neutral. I did want to point out in my note, and this goes in the staff report as well, that our legal and professional line item 7320 for charges attributed to the districting process will be in the negative. And we did this on purpose, if you recall back at the budget time, to make sure we used fund balance from administration to pay for those costs so they weren't included in cost allocation. Next slide. So basically, here's the summary slide that shows no changes. If there aren't any questions, I'll just keep moving along. All right, next slide, please. Fund 200, the Bay Ridge, in the ones with property tax related, we have similar changes for adjustments for property tax roll preparation, legal noticing. That's true for Fund 200. If you want to go to the next slide, please. We had to increase services and supplies, which was related to that noticing and the tax roll preparation, which resulted in a $345 increase in Fund 200. If there's no questions, we'll keep moving. All right. Fund 301 fire. There's a few more things here, not a lot. Go to the next slide. It's easier than reading it. These were the major changes we had to make in fire personal protection equipment. If we recall, we did authorize a CAL FIRE grant to cover some of this equipment, but the district did have a cost share, and this reflects that cost share. Again, the property tax assessment costs. And then the unusual one is the telephone bill up at the fire station. With the closure of the office, and if the public comes to the front door and rings the bell, that counts as a phone call, which we are charged for. So we're having to adjust the telephone budget by quite a bit, $7,300. My understanding, Chief Province is looking into a way to circumvent that bell being connected to the AT&T charges or system. So here it results in just about a $16,000 increase in services and supplies. Everything else remains the same. Here's our reserves as of December 31st. And I did on this one and a couple of the others show what we have in general checking. We do have a healthy amount, though I did make a wire transfer to pay for our new fire engine today. That was about $638,000. So you will see some of these numbers change. Any questions on fire?
Ron, I guess I'm just totally curious about what could be prompting people to walk up to the fire department and ring the front doorbell. I guess that's a subject that won't be answered tonight, I'm sure. It just puzzles me that in this kind of minor budget adjustment thing, that sort of thing pops up. It's bizarre.
Right. I really don't have an answer for you.
No, there's someone to talk to. I don't know. I'm going to appreciate that the doors, would be open if possible, but
right. Yeah. Okay. We'll move on to 400. Again, this is just like Fund 200. We had to do an adjustment. Next slide. So we where it shows up in services and supplies, that is the adjustment for the property tax assessment work that needs to be done by our consultant. Next slide. A little bit more going on in Fund 500. Not a lot though, considering the size and how we do get a lot of unanticipated costs that pop up during a year. So the overall increase is a little over $108,000, but most of that's for the 16th Street South Tank rehabilitation. The board did approve that increase in budget based on the bids that came in. And then we did have a little bit in some of the other cost categories, which next slide is easier to see than read. We had our insurance costs go up. SDRMA, their timing is they provide us with that cost increase after we've already approved our budget. So that's why we weren't close on that one. One of the bigger purchases, we did replace the Los Osos Middle School 4-inch meter, which cost about $6,000, but that will pay us back in more accurate meter reads. So we're glad to get that one done. This is where we didn't budget enough for two line items. One was billing supplies and forms, and the other one was for postage. So what we did is we balanced those out in the way we were coding, plus we had to add some for a net increase between those two of $6,550. In the well category, with us proceeding with the 8th Street Upper Aquifer well, which will then be blended with the 8th Street Lower Aquifer well for water quality reasons, we need to add a variable frequency drive to that lower well to make it easier for us to blend. And then finally, we need to buy a new South Bay upper well brine tank to help us with our water, brine water quality and when we store it. Next slide. So now moving into capital, there's where you see the 16th Street tank rehab project where it went up in cost. And we are in progress on that. And we did replace the utility truck, which actually saw a little bit of savings. And so there you see the original budget versus revised. Next slide. This is how it shows in our budget summary with services and supplies and capital outlay for that a little over $108,000 increase. And here are the reserves for water. We've got a healthy capital outlay reserve, and we have a healthy general checking account, which we are going to be spending a lot of money here. We have 8th Street Upper going, 16th Street well rehab, and we're going to be moving on that program Seawell. So we're positioned to be able to afford all of that. Any questions on Fund 500 before we move on? Go ahead, Laura. 600, really, there's nothing here. We just moved some money for GL coding changes to make it more accurate. Next slide. So basically, there are no changes to 600, which is our wastewater bond account and the management of that bond. Next slide. Drainage, really not much here either. We did decrease our investment income because of interest rates, because it was fairly significant for this size budget. And then we did move just a few other minor things. And then we also had the property tax issue here as well. So next slide. This is where we dropped the revenue to a more realistic point. And this is where you see that service and supplies or that work done for property tax assessment. And then our reserves are holding steady here. We haven't had many projects in drainage. So this is about the same as it has been. Any questions about Fund 800? Great. And then finally, Fund 900, excuse me, absolutely no changes. Go to the next slide. As you can see, everything's just status quo here. Any questions on 900? I did want to point out, next slide, please, Laura, that the UAC and FAC, UAC reviewed funds 500 and 800 and recommended approval. FAC reviewed all the funds and again recommended approval. And so with that, our recommendation is before you, and I'll answer any questions.
Okay. Not hearing any questions from the board. I'd like to open this for a public comment.
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, dial *9. If you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Great, I'll bring it back to the board. Do we have any further discussion or possibly a motion?
Yeah, I can do a motion. I recommend that the board approve the mid-year adjustment request as presented for funds 100, 200, 301, 500, 600, 800, and 900.
I'll second.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. Any further debate on this? Seeing none. Laura, can you do a roll call for us?
Of course. Director Gatchell.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Director Ohilski.
Yes.
Vice President Sesenia.
Yes.
President Forcroy.
Yes. Okay, with that, the motion is adopted. Okay, moving on. Our next agenda item is a resolution to reassign the solid waste franchise agreement to the district.
I have a short presentation for this. This is something as a community member back when this was assigned to the county. I'm just really glad to see this coming back our direction. So now as your general manager, it's with great pleasure to kind of run you through what the terms and conditions are of the agreement. Next slide, please. So just a little bit of background for those people that aren't aware. During the 2013 bankruptcy plan included the transfer of the solid waste franchise to the county in exchange for an infusion of cash of $2.1 million. Back in December, the county approached the district, me, with a proposal to return the agreement to us. Next slide. And basically, here's the general terms and conditions that were discussed. We still owe the county about $1.2 million. The annual franchise fee revenues, just almost $245,000. We've agreed, or at least in terms, to pay $10,000 a month or $120,000 a year over a 10-year period. The county did want some guarantee in case of mispayment or any type of default. So we agreed that they could use our Zone A property tax to satisfy any indebtedness. I can talk. There are quite a bit of responsibilities coming back with the assignment. Of course, we'll have to administer the provisions of the agreement. And this is all, if you look in the franchise agreement, there's things that the hauler franchisee are required to do. And if there are any customer type complaints, we have to resolve those. There is rate setting responsibilities. And again, here we have regulatory and statutory compliance for solid waste management. And the big one right now is SB 1383, which is the organic recycling and reduction of organics going to the landfill. And we will have to update our Title III to make sure we're in compliance with current regulations. Next slide. In terms of rate setting, Waste Connections has submitted a rate application in October to the county for the hauling portion of the fees. The county is processing that application, and under the contract, they're actually going to be a little bit late in getting that through the hearing process. So the transfer we're recommending be April 1st, but the solid waste rates have a tentative hearing in April. So there's kind of a timing thing there, but part of it is that we're going to agree to accept those rates as adopted by the county. And this is to hopefully avoid any retroactivity there. And then the district will be responsible for increasing rates to cover the expenses for compliance with SB 1383. So we're going to have to go right back into another small rate increase to cover those costs. Next slide, please. Staffing-wise, myself, the administrative service manager and the administrative clerk will handle the added responsibilities. I believe a lot of this will fall into the administrative services manager's responsibility for maybe more of the day-to-day with the administrative clerk actually obviously answering phone calls and answering questions. And in the course, my oversight and rate setting will be on me mostly. Next slide, please. So we will receive approximate net revenue of about $124,000 a year. Like I mentioned, the effective date is April 1st. The initial monthly payment will be paid by Fund 100 because it'll be due April 15th. So we'll have to flow a little money out of Fund 100 until we start receiving the franchise revenue, and that'll then be credited back to Fund 100. And then, of course, we'll have to develop a budget for fiscal year 2022-23. Next slide, please. So with that, if you have any questions, this is the recommendation in the staff report. And like I said, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Matthew, I'd like to just give a little more background information if I could, because I was the one that negotiated this back for the bankruptcy.
Sure, that would be great. Thanks, Marshall.
Yeah, I think Chuck and I were, well, Chuck and Margaret and I were the only three around back then. And this, we discussed this at the Financial Advisory Committee meeting on Monday. But this was one of the sticking points in our negotiations for the bankruptcy with the county, because the county was going to provide the funding for part of our portion of the bankruptcy in order to settle it. But we were really not happy that they were going to take the solid waste franchise and we'd have no ability to get it back. So the bankruptcy settlement does say that we would get it back upon repayment of the money to the county. I think the fact that they're coming back earlier with it is very, very positive from our perspective, because that was not something back in 2013 that they agreed to in our negotiations. So as background information, this was something that we definitely would have adopted when we were negotiating the bankruptcy. And Chuck, if I said anything wrong, you can correct me. I guess not. Yeah, so anyway, being the lead on the bankruptcy negotiations, I just want to put that out there for background information.
Thanks, Marshall. Okay, do we have any other questions for Ron?
I had a question. Ron, is it possible you might need more staff? I think my understanding was pre-bankruptcy, CSD had a lot more staff. And as we let certain things go, then we didn't need people to staff them. I see that, you know, you have who's going to take over the responsibility, but I guess I'm wondering if it's possible you might need a little more help.
I don't believe so at this time. My understanding is before it went to the franchise went to the county, Ann Coudart was actually doing the most of the responsibilities for solid waste at that point in time. You know, I'm not sure exactly what Ann did, but I think between myself and especially the administrative services manager, we can handle those duties. But that said, I'm always one to see how it goes, and I would definitely come back to the board if I thought we needed more help.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Ron, I have a question. So you're anticipating this is going to produce $124,000 a year of revenue. So that revenue will cover parts of the salaries for the people working on it, correct?
Correct.
And then anything left over, what would happen to that money?
Well, that's what we'll have to discuss. But, we'll look at programs and outreach programs within the community to promote recycling, promote solid waste reduction. SB 1383 is going to be a big deal. I think I don't know all the costs, what it'll take to implement that program, because IWMA will help us with some of it, but I think part of it's going to be on us as well. So it'll be all solid waste related. And I think most will remember we had chipping days. Right. In the past, and that was covered by the solid waste budget.
Okay. No, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. This time
That was kind of my question, was around the 1383. You kind of answered is like what kind of activities. I know a lot of it is separating food waste from your regular trash and those types of things. So we would be helping with those efforts.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. I'd like to open the discussion to the public. Can we open public comment?
If you'd like to make a public comment and you're on your phone, please dial *9. And if you're on your computer, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Do you have any further discussion or a motion?
I'd like to make a motion, Matthew. I'd like to move the staff recommendation. I move that the board adopt resolution number 2022-05, approving the solid waste assignment agreement, and number two, grant the general manager the authority to approve any non-material changes to the assignment as long as they are in substantial conformance with the intent of the agreement, and three, authorize the general manager to sign and execute the final agreement. That's my motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further debate before we go to a vote?
So, Ron, there's no chance that the composting, the rate increase necessary to comply with that. I mean, I just hate to go back-to-back rate increase requests.
Yeah, you know, it's not ideal at all. But, you know, with the rate, the hauling side of the rate increase needing to proceed, the only way we thought we could make this happen after talking with Waste Connections was two separate rate increases. Because the fee that'll be assessed will be associated with the IWMA, so the county couldn't go, because they're not part of the IWMA, assess a fee until after it would be assigned. So anyway, it was really a timing issue, so it is unfortunate.
Yeah, all in all, I'm glad this is happening. boneheaded move by the county, in my opinion, but good for us. And I hope Chipping Days comes back, and don't fear a compost bin, people.
Okay, do you have any further debate on this motion? Okay, let's do a roll call, please.
Director Ohulski.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Yes.
Vice President Sesenia.
Yes.
President Forcroy.
Yes. Okay, the motion passes. Moving on is our annual Brown Act training, and I haven't talked to Marshall, but I'm guessing Marshall is going to help us out with this.
Yep, I'm going to be doing my regular annual presentation. You guys are the second group to see it this year. The first group was the FAC, and I thought, Chris, they took it very, very nicely, I thought, didn't you?
I think you do a great job.
Okay. I wasn't asking for a pat on the back. I was just saying that I thought they liked it. Okay, yeah. So this is our annual presentation that I've been giving for a number of years. So it's understanding the Brown Act open meeting requirements. And part of what I'm going to do as I go through this, I'm going to talk about what the Brown Act requirements are, and with the understanding that a lot of these things are on hold now with the COVID situation. So towards the end, I'm going to talk about how these things are being addressed by the COVID. But what I'm laying out in the beginning is the base of what's in effect in the Brown Act. So the purpose of the Brown Act, it establishes the procedural framework for members of local government decision-making bodies to openly meet, debate, and act. It provides the means for the public to be informed about the views, discussions, and actions of its locally represented, or pardon me, locally elected and appointed governmental representatives. Overview of the Brown Act is governmental officials are elected by the people, represent the people, and govern on behalf of the people. The public needs to have the ability to observe, monitor, and evaluate its elected and appointed representatives. The Brown Act is designed to encourage public participation in local government. Laura's done this too many times, so she knows exactly when to flip to the next slide. So we go back to the Gettysburg Address, which is government of the people, by the people, and for the people, which is the intent of the Brown Act. A history of the Brown Act was introduced by Modesto Assemblyman Ralph M. Brown, which is why it's named the Brown Act, more than 50 years ago. The legislature has frequently added to the requirements of the act over the years, and particularly in the last few years because of the pandemic. And the requirements are detailed, comprehensive, and complex. Okay, so as part of the adaptation of the government code section 54950, the legislator's intent was spelled out as: the Brown Act embodies the philosophy that that public agencies exist for the purpose of conducting public business, and the public has the right to know how its quote-unquote collaborative decisions are being made. The people in delegating authority do not give their public servants the right to decide what is good for the people to know and what is not good for them to know. And I think if the key word there is public servants, which means we're in office to serve our public. Openness. Okay, so now again, we're going to get into the details of the act, and some of these things are on hold based on the pandemic. All meetings of governmental bodies which discuss, deliberate, and act on the public's business must be fully open and accessible to the public. Exceptions to the rule of openness are few and far between in normal times. Oops, sorry, there's a typo there. Far between in normal times. Subject organizations are all governing boards of local governmental agencies, the advisory and standing subcommittees created by such governing agencies, and all boards, committees, and bodies created by federal or state law. Okay, meeting. This is the definition of a meeting. Again, this is pre-pandemic. A meeting is any gathering of a majority of the board members at the same time and place that involves any aspect of the decision-making process. Exceptions to that, again, pre-pandemic, are conferences, training, and workshops, community forums, and meetings of other governmental bodies, for example, the Board of Supervisors, social or ceremonial occasions, for example, the Christmas parade of the chamber. And within these exceptions, board members must avoid talking about any applicable business while they are at any such event. Now, again, this is pre-pandemic. A majority of the board members must meet within the boundaries or jurisdictional area of the governmental entity with only specific exceptions. And those exceptions are inspection of real property, meeting with federal state officials to discuss legislative or regulatory issues. Now, I want to again make it clear, and I'm going to say this another 50 times. This is still the law. It's just been put on hold because of the pandemic. So that question has been asked a multitude of times. So, for example, the majority must meet within the boundaries or jurisdictional area of the government entity. Since you can do it by teleconferencing, you don't have to be in the same area, which is because of the pandemic, and it's in that temporary measure. If a board member participates by teleconferencing, the location that the board member is calling from must be noticed with an agenda posted and accessible to the public. Again, this is pre-pandemic, and it's on hold. Prohibited activities, any use of direct communication, personal intermediaries, or technological devices that is employed by a majority of the board members, which is three of the five, to develop a collective concurrence as to an action to which to be taken on an item is strictly prohibited. There's two examples here. A serial or a daisy chain is the first example. It's a meeting, which is a series of meeting, or pardon me, it's a series of meetings to develop a consensus. Although the meeting involves less than a majority of board members, this must be taken together that this involves a majority of the board members. So a serial or daisy chain meeting would be Matthew talks to me, I talk to Chuck, Chuck talks to Chris talks to Troy. So that's what this would be. And then a hub and spoke meeting is when a single board member acts as the contact point for other board members and communicates to each of them the other board members' positions in order to reach a consensus. So in this particular case, Chris could act as the center, and then she communicates to all the other four board members, but we're not meeting by with more than two, but she's communicating as the central point to all the rest of us. Okay, you may, use of email. Board members cannot use email to develop a collective consensus, agreement, or decision, or exchange information in email about their views or positions on public business. The rationale behind that is because these are not accessible to the public. Noticing requirement. Notice and an agenda for a regular board meeting must be posted in an accessible location 72 hours in advance and mailed to all those who request the notice. Special board meetings may be called by posting a notice and an agenda at least 24 hours in advance. Agenda requirements. The agenda must contain a brief description of every item to be discussed, and the descriptions must be clear enough to be understood by the members of the public. So if it's a technical thing, you know, dealing with, let's say, you know, water pumping or something like that, even though it may be all numerical and people would understand it, the members of the general public have to be able to understand it, even if it's outside their wheelhouse of knowledge. Agendas for board's meeting must include a time for public comment. Okay, the public rights. The members of the public have the right to address the board members on both agenda and non-agenda items within the board's jurisdiction, and I'm speaking about during a meeting, by be accommodated if disabled so they can access and participate in the meeting. And again, with the COVID situation, this one is on hold and probably in the long term will be changed. And then receive copies of all written materials distributed to the board members with the sole exception of privileged items. Okay, now we're going to get into the COVID situation here. So the first thing that was involved here was Executive Order 92920. Which was in order to implement public health officials' recommendation to slow the spread of coronavirus, COVID-19, California Governor Gavin Newsom issued Executive Order N29-20 on March 17, 2020. This order relaxes some of the Brown Act's public requirements that are not practical in light of the current pandemic. The key word here is that it relaxes. It does not overrule those requirements. So it just relaxes them and says at the end. So what N2920 does, it allows local legislative bodies, which is the CSD, to hold public meetings via teleconference without having to provide a physical location from which members of the public may observe the meeting and offer public comment. As long as the members of the public are allowed to observe and address the meeting telephonically or otherwise electronically, subject to specified notice and accessibility requirements. So that was that. And then subsequent to that, on September 18, 2020, Governor Newsom signed Assembly Bill 992 into law. AB 992 modernizes the Brown Act's provisions concerning serial meetings by addressing the use of social media by members of a board. Now, this is not temporary. This is a permanent change to the law here. AB 992 clarifies that it ordinarily does not violate the Brown Act to participate in social media. Interestingly, though, AB 992 specifically allows the use of digital icons, which is what the bill says, for example, emojis, maybe, in discussions on social media. However, AB 992 also creates a bright line rule that board members may not respond directly to any communication posted on the internet by other board members regarding a matter within the jurisdiction. So if, for example, Matthew posts something, I cannot put an emoji of a thumbs up or a smiley face or thumbs down or whatever. This means that a board member may post a thumbs up in response to a constituent's social media post, but may not do so if the post is from a fellow board member. Now, this seems a little awkward to me because you could have five board members post a thumbs up in response to a constituent's social media post, but they can't do it if it's from one of us. So I'm not quite sure what the clarification is here, but that's the how the law states it. Okay, then we have AB 361, which was passed as an emergency bill. And since it was an emergency bill, it took effect immediately when the governor signed the bill on September 16th, 2021. AB 361 exempts local government bodies from certain provisions relating to teleconferencing public requirements under the Brown Act, including teleconference quorum, meeting notice, and agenda requirements during states of emergency. Again, this does not overrule the Brown Act. It just allows this to occur during states of emergency. However, in order to make this effective, the resolution making the required findings must be adopted within 30 days of its first teleconference meeting implementing AB 361 and must be readopted every 30 days, which is what we do on the consent agenda every monthly meeting. Okay, so enforcement of the Brown Act, there's a number of ways that this Brown Act can be enforced. There's civil remedies. Compliance with the Brown Act can be enforced by civil lawsuit by anybody that chooses to sue a member of the board or the board itself. Mm-hmm. A court can declare actions void that are not in compliance with the act, if not cured. So a court could say that you can't do X, Y, and Z. And then my experience has been is most boards will then adopt X, Y, and Z. They don't want to have to get a declaration saying their actions are void unless they're going to appeal those actions or a portion of those actions to an appeal court. And then finally, in that regard, the district can be liable for legal costs and attorney's fees. Okay, now we have the quiz, which we had everybody on the FAC got 100%. So there's a high mark for you guys on this. Although I did add a couple of questions after the FAC because I wanted to make it not as simple as it was there. Okay, so we have a true-false quiz. And then the first one is a meeting as defined in the Brown Act occurs only when some action is taken.
False.
Well, we got one vote. False, Chris.
I say false.
Come on, Chuck and Troy, I got to have an answer here.
I say false when you post an agenda, even if you're not taking an action.
Okay. What do you say, Troy?
I'll go with the group.
Okay. Yeah, you guys are right. Okay. Board members may poll each other by social media on any issues which may come before the board.
I feel like I'm cheating since I took the test if I go first, so I won't.
This is the big change, Marshall, and I want to say thank you for staying up to date with the Brown Act update because, frankly, I've heard a lot of, but false. Things change. And the social media stuff is important to stay up with. And I think the most important advice I could give is read everything and react to almost nothing unless you really see something, such misinformation out there. And then maybe you have the general manager respond to it. But no, we can't do that.
Agree. False.
Yeah. Everybody, good answer.
Yeah. Everybody agrees. Yes. Good answer. That's a very, very valid statement. Okay. A discussion between two board members of a five-member board, which is us, is considered a meeting under the Brown Act if the board members discuss district business. This is the easiest one in the whole group, so we've got to get this one right.
I think it's false.
False. False. Not a quorum.
Yep, got to be three. Okay, the board may take a vote by secret ballot in open session. You've got to think about this as far as the big picture of what the purpose of the Brown Act is.
False.
Okay, we got one vote. Let's go.
I think you can, if it's an open session.
But if it's red, though, right? I mean, you could vote, but the ballot would be red.
I that's my understanding.
Okay. What do your other two guys think?
Yeah, I think only if you can see what the ballots are in the end.
I lost my audio and my video, so I sorry. I just got back.
Well, you were bright the other day. Yes, we can take a vote in like paper and then hand it over to Laura. But Laura, when in that particular case, have to read. Chuck voted yes.
Yes.
Troy voted no. So you can do a written ballot, but it has to be publicly,
disclosed.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Five. Halfway there. Any person may record an open meeting of the board via audio or video recordings.
True.
Yes, without being obnoxious about it.
Yep. A member of the public may address the board at a regular meeting on any item of interest to the public, provided the matter is within the jurisdiction of the board.
True.
Yes.
Yep, you guys are right, obviously. Sorry, my phone was going to ring. I had to do something. The last five questions here. Number seven. The board may limit the amount of time members of the public are allowed to speak on matters of public interest.
True.
Yep. We can and we do.
Well, not necessarily. Okay. Again, this number eight applies to pre-pandemic, so it's the Brown Act law, not anything that happened subsequent to that. The board may hold its meetings at any location it chooses within the county, provided the public is notified.
True. Doesn't have to be within our district?
False. Yes, have to be in the district, yep.
Uh-oh, somebody said true. Who was that?
That was me, but I guess I'm thinking about... Yeah.
You're thinking about now.
Yeah.
Well, that's not bad out of, 40 questions. We got 39.
In 2 years, I'm completely conditioned now.
There's no wall of shame here.
Okay. Number nine. A board member may post an emoji in any discussion on social media.
False.
I'm going to say false.
Yeah. It's the any discussion is the key thing. You can't do it with the board members. Okay, and last but not least, the board must adopt and readopt AB 361 every 30 days as a general action item.
All right, that's a new one. I think it's true.
I suppose it is. It's pandemic required. What I don't know. I'm going to whiff on this one, but yeah, true.
It's on our agenda.
Okay, everybody says true.
Yes.
It's false.
Oh, so we don't have to do it. We could just meet in person.
No, what it says, if you read this carefully, and the reason I put this in here is because I was influential with the state in allowing this item to be put on consent agenda rather than a general action item. The board must adopt and readopt AB 361 every 30 days. It does not have to be a general action item. It can be a consent.
Kind of a trick question, but yeah.
Well, hey.
John Marshall, keep us on our toes.
What can I say? Okay, let's move on to the conclusion here. Board members are representatives of the people who have been entrusted to advise on governmental affairs. The Brown Act is for the benefit of the public that board members represent, and the Brown Act must be taken seriously. Failure to do so can result not only in legal penalties, but more importantly, in my opinion, a loss of public trust. So thank you very much for your attention, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you, Marshall.
Does anybody have any questions for Marshall on Brown Act? I believe I need to open that for public comment. Any public comments on our brand app training?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, moving on. Do we have any public comment for items not on this agenda?
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, that moves us to administrative and committee reports. Yep, we have Mr. Province on the phone. We'll go with the fire department report first, please.
Wait, Matthew, you had to ask if anybody wanted to pull the item.
Don't I do that after all the reports?
Yeah. No. Yeah, because we're not dealing with the consent agenda yet. That's item 7. We're doing
My mistake. I thought they were okay. My mistake.
I mean, I made a big mark or I thought I was supposed to.
So. No, I'm sorry, my mistake. Yes, they are combined.
Okay. Go with the fire department report, please.
All right, good evening. How's everybody tonight?
Good.
All right. So look at our activity this last month, 154 calls between the 22nd and 21st of December and January. looking at our standard max out calls and medical aids, 92, and then 27 traffic collisions. Some of those incidents were not necessarily in Los Osos proper. That's has to do with the attachment to my vehicle and how I kind of travel about the county. 10 incidents reported as fire, 3 as hazardous. That's power lines down, things of that nature, or hazardous materials, but none of those were hazardous materials calls. And then 15 public assists and 7 false alarms. Company 15 was called to cover the station 6 times in the reporting period. We're still currently dealing with COVID-19 calls types. This last kind of run with the Omicron coming through finally kind of really hit hard in the Battalion 1, which Los Osos is part of. We were definitely strapped for staffing to keep things up and running, but we were successful in being able to maintain our contracted level of staffing throughout the uptick. It looks like we're kind of on the backside of it as far as our staff for County Fire, Cal Fire, and Station 15. Looks like we're on the right side of things now, and it's kind of moved on, and hopefully we've weathered the storm, and we can start getting back to some normalcy. Moving on to special programs and projects. I hope this, I can soon remove this item from my reports, but the new fire engine should be getting close to completion. Next week, I am going down to Rialto to pick up one of the 3 fire engines that was part of the batch that our engine is with. And then hopefully our engine is shortly following behind. So I would hope that by the end of February, I'm at least getting it back into the county, if not early March. But I hope by next reporting period that I'm able to say that I at least have physically touched it and it's physically in the county. We're going to be doing a sidewalk CPR event. I just got the date today. That's why the date did not make it into the report. February 24th. The first one they're going to do outside the fire station. There'll be something up on the marquee and they're doing it on a Thursday. So they're going to target hopefully some of the folks that are coming by to pick up their kids and drop off kids at the school. And then I've also asked them to look at the farmer's market in Baywood and potentially setting up an event there as well in the very near future, not waiting till August to do that. So station staff will be contacting the folks that organize the farmer's market in Baywood, and hopefully we'll be having one there soon. We're still going to we're keeping our reserve firefighter applications open. We did have a few of our candidates that we just went through the hiring process that were fortunate enough to obtain employment in with other jurisdictions. And we've also had some folks that have been with us for a little while that have moved on to other jurisdictions. Luke Kramer got hired with San Luis Obispo City Fire Department. So he'll be moving on. And her name is escaping me right now, but was one of our new hires, just accepted a position with Livermore Pleasanton Fire Department. So more testament to the success of the South Bay Reserve program in not only being able to draw members of the community in, but also help folks springboard their fire department aspirations for careers into some other things. Probably one of the more talked about things in the local community here over the last couple of weeks is our pile burning that's been going on up in Cabrillo Estates. About 3 years ago, the Fire Safe Council worked to put in a fire break, a shaded fuel break up along there. And upon my arrival to the unit, I took a tour of that and noticed that there were several piles up there. Ended up being a little over almost 70 piles in total. Today, they completed that project. They've all been burned and extinguished, and we will be moving on to bigger and better projects, hopefully in the near future. The fuels crew will be moving up to the Cambria area to do some similar type projects up there. And then hopefully with some progression on the bigger project for putting a shaded fuel break around the entire community, we can start turning our sights onto that, working in conjunction with the Fire Safe Council. And just to kind of go back to some statistics, kind of our totals for last year, we totaled up a little over 1,700 calls, which is our busiest year to date. It looks like we were kind of averaging right about 1,200 to 1,300 calls up until about 2018, where we started seeing an uptick. So we're just under 100 calls more than what we had last year. And with that, any questions?
Yeah, thanks, Chief. Hey, I had a question. What does it mean Company 15 was called to cover the station? What does that mean? I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, so typically if both of the apparatus out of the station get committed to an incident, or we see the need for additional personnel, the engine captain can initiate a callback of Company 15. So that would be our reserve firefighters get a page to return to the station. And typically when we have a reserve fire apparatus, they can upstaff that. Right now, what we have them doing is upstaffing our utility pickup truck. Or if we have to send somebody into the hospital, say, a medical aid rises to the occasion, one of our paramedics has to ride into the hospital with the ambulance, we can call back Company 15 members to bolster our staff numbers so that we're ready for the next call.
So Company 15 is our reserves?
Yes.
Okay. And that would happen if you're already on something, you have another call basically?
It kind of depends on what the call is. If we, determine that it's something that we're going to be committed to for an extended amount of time, that would be one trigger. Another one would be like what I mentioned with the staff riding into the hospital with the ambulance.
Yeah.
Potentially if we're going to have to be out of the area for any period of time, we can initiate that. Typically that's going to be an engine captain call for them to make that call. The battalion chief can make that call, but it's usually coming straight from the engine captain, depending on what he's got in front of him.
Great. Thanks. The other question I had was about mutual aids. I was just curious about how frequently are stations responding to those and how far away are they going?
So greater alarms, they'll go out, they're available to go outside of basically in the entire county area they can go to. They are part of the strike team plan for going out of the unit, but that doesn't happen very often. It certainly hasn't happened since I've been here. We typically try to use the other county apparatus to do that. They are available as a countywide resource on a greater alarm plan. Say we get a second, third, or fourth alarm fire, they certainly could do that. I think the furthest that they responded out of the area since I've been here would be the Avila fire a couple years back. They responded to that, in which I think every fire engine in the county was on that incident except for three. We're not going out of the area that often. Typically Morro Bay, we're going into Morro Bay more than anywhere else. And I don't have those numbers in front of me, but it's not very often. If Morro Bay gets a fire, we'll be going there. a fire type call. I'm actually going to be meeting with Chief McCrane from Morro Bay Fire, Tom Swanson, my supervisor, and the ECC battalion chief. We're going to be looking to update the automatic and mutual aid plans for between the North Coast departments. That would be Cambria Fire, San Luis Obispo County Fire, Morro Bay Fire, and South Bay, which is part of County Fire.
Right. Okay. So
it's not happening a whole lot that, you know, I could really give you a stat that would, you know, really make your eyes pop out. It's a handful of times, less than 10 that since I've been here.
Okay. No, I appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions for the fire department? Okay. We'll move on to the sheriff's department report.
Wait, Matthew, this is Chuck. I just wanted to say that I think the farmer's market sidewalk CPR is a good idea. I like the program, and I don't know where you find that many people gathered at one time. That's just a good idea. And thanks to the fire department for thinking about that.
Yeah, thank you, Chief. Okay, let's move on to our sheriff's report.
Hello, Deputy Brett Mobley with the Sheriff's Office, filling in for Sergeant Dowdy. This month, we responded to approximately 56 calls for service in Los Osos, which included one battery call, 34 disturbances, 4 burglaries, 10 thefts, 5 vandalisms, 2 mail thefts, 1 phone scam, and 14 suspicious circumstance calls, along with about 50 traffic enforcement stops and 29 proactive patrol activities. This is my first time doing this, so I apologize. If you guys have any questions, please let me know.
Okay, do we have any questions for the sheriff? Doesn't look like it. Yeah, thank you for joining us tonight. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Let's move on to, I see Highway Patrol here. So let's move to Captain Klingenberg.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for your time. Thanks for allowing us to be here tonight. Just a real quick summary of the activity in and around the Los Osos area for January. We made one DUI arrest in the month of January in Los Osos, and we had 5 collisions. One collision was just one vehicle, non-injury, one vehicle versus apparently a large dog. There's some pretty good damage to the car that occurred on South Bay Boulevard at Bay Oaks Drive. We had a collision, also non-injury, Turi Road, 0.2 miles south of South Bay Boulevard. Like I said, no injury there. 3 vehicle collision. The next collision was on Petro Valley Road, 4,000 feet south of Sandspit Road. A solo vehicle overturned, where the vehicle made an unsafe turning movement. Rollover damage to that vehicle, but no injuries. Minor injury collision on Los Osos Valley Road, west of South Bay Boulevard. Vehicle also made an unsafe turning movement and struck a tree. Had some minor injuries to the driver there, and some major damage to the vehicle. And then we had another vehicle versus animal. This one was a vehicle versus a horse on Los Osos Valley Road, south of Lariat Drive. We issued 15 citations in and around Los Osos during the month of January. And some of you may have seen, we also put out the speed trailer, the radar speed trailer on Los Osos Valley Road before the speed limit reduced to 55. We put the speed trailer out there. We just removed that today. Sometimes the batteries need to be recharged, things like that. Sometimes they go down. We went out there today and found that the speed was not displaying. So we took the trailer in and we'll get that repaired. And like Chief Provence said, we're dealing with personnel issues. We're just through regular attrition and things like that. We're significantly down from where we were a couple of years ago. And we've also had to navigate the COVID wave in our office as well. So that's kind of an overview. And I am also available for any questions that you have.
Well, thank you very much, Captain. Does anybody have any questions for CHP?
I appreciate the readout, the little, next to the road.
Yeah, the radar trailer.
Move that around town. Just keep it in people's mind that there's a speed limit here, and this is where you're driving compared to that. And Los Osos Valley Road down at 9th Street, put it all over town. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that. Just know that I have one trailer that I've shared with, I have to share with Templeton and with Santa Maria area.
Oh.
And we hit lots of community requests for that
Thank
trailer.
Thank you for pointing that out.
So
I
move it around.
Move it a block or two every week. Okay.
Yeah, if I could keep it in one area, have more, that would be awesome. I just don't have that at that many resources. So I'll get it back to Los Osos, I promise. But I won't tell you when and where.
Thank you. I won't ask.
Okay.
Hey, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate yours as well. Good night.
All right. Okay. Let's move on to General Manager Report.
Thank you very much. I did want to just back up a little bit on the utilities department report. Mainly wanted to point out how production was down 12.5% compared to the previous December. So you can see how rain impacts water use within the community. And it just shows how important for us to be diligent about that. You know, and on that note, if you look at the rainfall table that's in the report, I always find it interesting to just kind of look through the years and see how rainfall has come. And, you know, these last 2 years, you know, it was 8.4 this December, and last year in January, it was 9.3 or 9.93. And it's like we get these big storms and that's it. So just something to look at. And then really quick on the utility department updates, you know, we have two capital projects moving right now. 8th Street Upper Well is in full swing. 16th Street is still lagging a little bit. There's some work being done, but the coating contractor is having COVID issues with his staff, and that's been pushed back again for another week or week and a half. And then finally, I just wanted to point out the water resilience project update. You know, back in September, the board authorized me to kind of start an investigation, and I've had three meetings with the city of Morro Bay. I've had three meetings with the county of San Luis Obispo, and starting to gather information to eventually come up with some cost numbers so we can actually daylight that with our UAC and then the board. Moving on to my report, I'm making great progress on our water rate study. If you recall, back in 2016, I had Rob Miller and Richard Margetson helping me. I'm gonna enlist them again. They said they'd both volunteer to help review the information. It's going to go much quicker this time because we did build a rate model that we can plug information into. So I've got all the numbers settled in the model. And so now it's just running the scenarios and coming up with recommendations. So with that, we're going to have a preview of the information at the UAC on February 16th, on to FAC on February 28th. And then to the board for consideration and direction on March 3rd. We have to be fairly quick if we're gonna try to hit a July 1 implementation date. So I'll need a decision at the April meeting to move forward with the Prop 218, which would then come back at the June meeting for adoption. So that's kind of the quick schedule for that. In terms of recruiting for our administrative services manager, unfortunately our top two both candidates declined. So we are back out advertising that position. Very unfortunate, but we are working on how to prolong Laura's tenure with us, even if it's remote. So we have a backup plan. Then I've been working with a regional desalination working group organized by the county. We've met again. This is, again, looking at long-term water resiliency within the county, and we're talking planning horizon of 15 to 20 years. So I don't think I'll be here to see the end of that project, but it's really great to see the county and others, agencies within the county looking out for the future water in the county. And then finally, my drought reminder. I talked a little bit about it. Please stay diligent, check for leaks, and watch your outdoor water, your irrigation. With that, I can answer any questions.
Okay. Anybody have any questions for Ron?
No questions. Just I'm so happy the 8th Street well is finally, we're working on it. That's April by April. That's wonderful news.
That's our hope.
Yeah. Thank you for everything, Ron. This is, even if you're not around to see the end of these resiliency plans, I'm sure glad you're here to get them started.
Thank you.
I just had a question, Ron, about the ASM position in hiring. Did you get two declines for the same kind of reason, or is it just, are we competitive enough? Is there anything that...
I believe salary entered into both decisions. Definitely one. The other one wasn't as clear about reasoning for declining, but my impression was it was salary.
Okay.
Great question, Matthew. We need to really think seriously about this kind of thing. Can we attract the kind of people that we need? It's been so wonderful having a staff that just handles everything. And I want to make sure that we stay in that place and we seem to be comfortable with finances. So that's a great question.
Is there something that the board could do to change that? Or is that a call that you make?
Well, it would definitely be a board decision to change the salary range. And I will be looking at that for our upcoming budget. Especially with solid waste responsibilities coming in and moving towards or into that position, I think we could justify a salary range change without much impact to the other funds. So that's definitely something we'll be considering, or I'll be presenting for consideration.
Got it. Okay. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. With that, I think our next item is the UAC.
The UAC, what I want to talk about is the future. You hear the updates, and 16th Street is coming along, 8th Street, program Seawell. We're moving ahead. We're able to handle our BMC commitments. But the next thing that's looming out there is this discussion in the community about what affects us is the continue to serve letters. People are wanting to build the guest houses and that kind of thing. And we need to supply the continue to serve letters. And we need a discussion about what that all means. There's just a lot of activity on social media about what's going on with county permits, the appeals to the Coastal Commission, all of these things. And I want to make sure that we are speaking with a unified voice in the community and that we can add some clarity to the dialogue that seems to be out there. So the UAC in the next couple months will be looking at these bigger picture issues of what the continue to serve letters mean in terms of water use and that kind of thing. Nothing's going to happen in the very near term in terms of in a couple months, because we need to wait for the county's Title 19 report. And that's their look at Title 19, which is the the retrofit ordinance. And so we need to look at whether this ordinance really is saving water the way it was anticipated. And when that report comes out, then we can move this discussion ahead. But that's what we'll be looking at in the future. And all in all, I'm just happy that we're able to meet our commitments. We're supplying water. We're keeping up with everything we need to do. And thank you to our utility department for that.
Hey, does anybody have any questions for Chuck? Okay, move right on to FAC.
Let's see, we just did the usual. Marshall gave the Brown Act training, which everybody else will get this month. The committee recommended approval of the FAC meeting minutes for January 3rd, 2022. The committee recommended approval of the mid-year budget adjustments, which I guess I should have mentioned before we voted on it. And they recommended approval of the warrant register and to receive and file the financials for the period ending December 31st, 2021. Our next finance committee meeting is February 28th at 5:30. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Chris. Okay, do we have any director's announcements of district and community interest or attendance at public meetings, trainings, etc.? Okay. And I don't believe we have any previously asked questions. I wanted to point out we have a major week of meetings coming up. We start on Tuesday the 15th with a Parks and Rec meeting where we'll be discussing the dog park. We have a revised preliminary site plan to go over. Next night, the 16th, Wednesday the 16th, UAC, and Thursday the 17th, we have the Emergency Services Committee. So Ron and Laura have a very full week that week.
Oh, can I ask a question? My calendar has a bunch of those meetings for 2 weeks, but it also has me attending LOCAC, which I'm happy to do, but I did it last month. I was wondering if that was a typo.
It was. It's actually supposed to be Director Sestenia. Sorry about that.
You're it, Chuck.
I'm sorry, Chuck.
Thank you for the heads up. Chuck's
up. Yeah, I'll send you the email and the agenda when it comes out.
Okay, I'm going to move us along. Does anybody have an item on the consent agenda that they would like to pull? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to move to public comment for items on the administrative committee reports and the consent agenda.
If you'd like to make a public comment, please raise your hand. There's no public comment at this time.
Okay, with that, I'll bring it back to the board. We didn't pull any consent items, so I believe we are ready for either further debate or a motion.
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion to approve to receive and file the administrative and committee reports and approve the consent agenda.
I'll second
that.
Oh, that was close.
Chuck can have it.
Okay, I have a motion and I have a second.
You have 2 seconds.
A motion and a second and a second. Does anybody have any other debate or questions before we go to a vote? Okay, seeing none, can we do a roll call, please?
Director Ohulski.
Yes.
Vice President Sestenia.
Yes.
Director Gatchel.
Unmute.
You're muted, Troy. Sorry.
Yes.
Director Womack.
Yes.
President Forcroy.
Yes. Okay, thank you, everyone. Does anybody have any future agenda items or closing board comments they'd like to make? You know, I'd like to thank Ron for working diligently on the Waze franchise and also simultaneously going through HR and going through interviews and whatnot. That's it's been a lot of work. Appreciate your diligence on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Matthew.
Yeah,
I wanted to express my thanks to Ron too for working on the solid waste franchise agreement. I think that was a major, major accomplishment, and I really, really appreciate all the work that he put into it.
And of course, I'd like to thank Laura. Is this going to be your last board meeting, Laura?
No, we're not letting her leave.
If we don't have somebody, I will do it remotely.
Gotcha. Okay. But I appreciate all of your help, of course.
Yes.
Thank you.
One of the benefits of COVID, we've learned how to do this remotely. Right. And Laura, I just want to say thank you for what you've brought to the CSD. Having a solid staff that you just don't question, you rely on, is wonderful. And we're going to miss you. And who knows where how long it's going to be. But thanks for stepping up and helping us through this, and being here the last couple of years. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Laura, too, for all of her work. And I think, Ron, you have a good staff, and unfortunately, Laura's moving, but she'll work remotely maybe forever.
If the board approves it and we can make it work.
All depends on the salary, right, and the benefits.
Yeah.
Anyways, Laura, I wanted to thank you personally because I've worked with you closely on a number of items, and you've been always very, very helpful and very productive.
Thank you.
Okay, well, with that, I'm going to adjourn our meeting. Have a good month, everybody.
Thank you.
Everybody. Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Great meeting. Thank you.